Howard Lindzen is the founder and general partner at Social Leverage. All opinions expressed by Howard and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Social Leverage or StockTwits. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. Guests may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.
Knut!
Howard.
What's up?
Not too much. We're getting wonderful, wonderful fall weather here in Phoenix, which is summer weather for most other people.
It's your voice. It's just that smooth tobacco sound of Knut Jensen. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I'm a mess. I was just between eating a sandwich in the car and reading the Giuliani tweets. You know, Borat caught him. Is that already spread around the world? Like, I mean, the fucking guy's got Borat and an underage girl, like, on camera. Like, I mean, they just goofed on him. I spilt all over my pants, all my sandwich. So Giuliani now owes me a pair of pants.
You wearing your food.
This guy with pants. Anyways, it is a beautiful fall day, so we've given it away. It is in October. We're in October. That's all we're telling people.
Mm-hmm.
And has COVID been here? It's raging in other places. What's Phoenix like?
I think it's about the same it's been for a while. I think it's been, maybe a slight increase. People are forgetting, but we have a lot of physical distance to people here compared to other places.
What about ASU? Your son's there, so what are we hearing?
I haven't heard any major things from there lately.
Hmm. John was saying his kids both had it at school. The parting's been insane.
Right.
Yeah. I went riding with Jono this weekend.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. This is a very inside baseball conversation to lead this podcast. All righty. Excuse me.
No general interest stuff here. Just
all right. Sorry. So today we have a really interesting guest, an old friend.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get to see him that much. We're seed investors, a company called Life360. He has some classic stories on the long road to an IPO on the Australian Stock Exchange. I think if he had waited for SPACs to take off, he might have got a higher market cap in the U.S. But it was a really interesting moment where, you know, no IPOs in the U.S. and you got to be worth $1 trillion to go public for people to be interested. And he went over to Australia and did an IPO. So it's pretty cool.
That's awesome. We're
going to talk about that. We're going to talk about SPACs. We're going to talk about building a business that some teens are freaked out about, you know, because Life360 is about keeping track, you know. Do you use Life360?
I should.
Well, you're the type of guy that did.
I will now.
So we were seed investors, and he's done a great job. Anyway, so let's get him on the phone.
Will do.
Hello.
Chris Halls.
How's it going?
Good. I think you may be the first Harvard guy on the show.
I am only half a Harvard guy. I got into business school and I paid my tuition, then I never showed up. I went with a business instead. So I'm a Berkeley guy. It's the only place I finished.
Oh, you lefty pinko.
Well, I was in the military before Berkeley, and in the military they said I was the most liberal person in the world, and then in Berkeley they said I was a staunch Republican. So
people call me pinko. I make a Trump card. People, I don't even know what a pinko is. I'm like so right wing, and I'm still getting called pinko. I'm eye for an eye. I don't know, you know. I mean, so you went to Berkeley and then did the Harvard thing. Well, I can say I went to Harvard and didn't show up too. I mean, can you prove that? Was that on your pitch to us as a seed investor? Because that may be false. That could be.
Pretty straight about it, but it was. I gave my check. I'm sure there's a canceled bank check at some point.
Now it would just be Venmo me back the money, Havad.
If you give me back the gains, I'm all good, and I could use a little bit of extra.
So you are a public company in Australia.
We are, yes.
And do you like Australia?
I do like Australia, for sure. And I've learned a lot about the culture as I've been there. Maybe is it tying this in with founder advice? What they told me was that they like CEOs who are a little bit more mild-mannered, the whole thing about the tallest poppy gets cut down. And I don't think I've necessarily been the best marketing CEO. Fundraising's always been difficult for me. And so I thought Australia might be a little more set up for my personality. But now I think they're full of crap. I think they want the rah-rah salesman in America. Like, just like they wanted a real American. They said they liked me because I wasn't one, but I don't believe them anymore.
That's a good point. So how old is Life360? And tell people what the company does.
Life360 is 12 years old at this point. We were literally one of the launch apps on Android back in the day. There are two ways to describe us. The very simple way of describing it is like, Refine My Friends on steroids, specifically for families. So all the location sharing plus stats on how your kids are driving, all these safety features like roadside assistance, automatic crash detection, identity theft protection, so on and so forth. That's really what we are now. Our vision, though, is to build much more of this family membership service where you as a parent have all these things you worry about: physical safety, digital safety, getting people to soccer practice, traveling with your kids, your younger one drinking the Tylenol, whatever. We kind of want to be what AAA was to drivers 20 years ago to parents today, where we just give so much value, give so much peace of mind, you become a paying, card-carrying Life360 member.
Okay. I haven't gotten the pitch in a while because we sold some shares when you went public because we're allowed to. But wow, that... So I just went to... What's the name? AAA is one of the great... Even in COVID, I had to go do something at AAA and I was dreading it. I thought I was going to be going to like the demilitarized zone. And yep, it's a fantastic experience. Like that company, like you said, if you want to just kind of mold yourself after like a modern version of that, I mean, they kick ass. So that's a good aspirational brand to go after.
Yep. And bigger than driving. I think driving or driving culture is fading, but now we're digital. And if we can be a more digital equivalent and help you in broader ways, that's definitely what we aspire to.
And so okay, so I want to go back. So, but I remember when you started, yes, a simple app, because we had been investors in LifeLock. So when you saw Life360, it kind of resonated with me because kind of along the same lines.
Yep.
And where are we today with privacy and kids? I know you were like a moment, you were the most hated CEO amongst teenagers. Tell me that story.
Sure. It all started with TikTok. So most of our history as a company...
That's just a great line. It all started with TikTok.
Teens were just... they would ignore us. They were apathetic, both good and bad. We tried to engage them. They would just... It was crickets. And then probably 7-8 months ago, people kept telling me, like, I saw you on TikTok. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm not on TikTok. I barely use a thing. It was a bunch of 16-year-old girls making me feel very uncomfortable, and I quit. And how TikTok works, I bet a lot of people listening, probably similar age to me, I'm 37, so I'm past TikTok. You basically take these sounds and you copy a sound and you recreate the same video. So it's almost like video memes based on sounds. And I guess it was early this year, there was a sound, there was some rap musician, the words like beating your ass. And then the meme was you'd look me up, you'd Google Life360 creator, and then you'd see my picture pop up, and then the beating your ass would play, and they'd have a dance about punching me in the face.
What the fuck? That's crazy.
And there were thousands of these videos, and you could scroll forever and ever, and you'd just see thousands of them. And I think it probably got over 100 million views of kids seeing my face getting pretended to be beaten up. I got a little worried because we have over 25 million customers, and all it takes is one crazy. And I was getting a few kids like pulling out knives. It's like, I was just wondering, I hope you know it's a joke, right? And it was fine. I'm still alive. But I kind of ignored it and thought it was funny. And then shit hit the fan in April when everybody was locked down and the teens had the bright idea of trying to spread this rumor that if apps were rated one star, they would get kicked off the app store. So we, along with like Google Classroom and Zoom, were the victim of this organized campaign. Wow. To get us rated one star so we'd get pulled off the App Store. I mean, if you think about it, simple algebra, a single five-star review means you can never have a one-star average, right? You'll always be 1.0 or whatever. But anyway, the whole thing was fake, but got a life of its own. And within a month, we got 1 million one-star ratings.
And my God, what a troll that is. I mean, is that what the kids did to Trump too with the tickets?
It was this, and they said it was inspired by what they did to us. So if Trump loses, I'm going to take credit because the TikTok teams hammered us and they were inspired by that and hammered Trump. So, you know, I might be saving democracy here.
So how did you undo this?
So that's when it became a real business issue versus kind of an amusement. And it was also interesting, like, well, maybe there's some silver lining that like they used to ignore us and we have household name brand status overnight with the majority of teens in America. Well, like kids seeing me on the street and saying I'm the TikTok guy.
So you were getting recognized as the TikTok guy?
Yeah. The first time I heard about it at a friend's house with teenagers, and they said, you're the TikTok guy. And I was like, no, you got me confused. And then they showed me the video and I was like, what the hell? And then it kept happening. So we just, at first we thought maybe, you know, like maybe we get Apple or Google to help us. Google actually deleted all the reviews from it. Apple being Apple was a little cagier and slower. And I just thought, fuck it. What if I go right into the lion's den and just completely like blow their minds with who I am or on what we're about? Cause I was expelled from Catholic school and like, my parents let me go to Africa myself when I was 12, and I was not this like helicopter kid. We did not start the app so parents could control. It was more like safety and hopefully using the app so your parents would give you more freedom, not less. Hmm. So I went to the people that were like hating on us hardcore, and I congratulated them for their excellent efforts and stroked their ego a bit in genuine ways. I mean, like, yeah, good for them. I'm not bitter. These are like 16-year-old kids. I'm not going to be mad. Like, yeah. Good creativity, right? So that was like a peace offering. And then within a weekend, I started collaborating with these guys and just explained to them our real intent with the app. I actually found out the kids that were organizing the campaign didn't even like, they didn't even have problems with the app. It was just, they thought it was funny. So ironically, the people that were most upset about the app, they're like, yeah, my parents love us. Yeah, they're a little annoying, but no, we're cool with Life360. So the whole thing was just a meme. And I went on there and emerged pulling off a Darth Vader mask and said, I'm moving away from the dark side. And I promised to launch features for teens. And I kind of acted like a complete goofball and moron explained that we were going to launch features that gave teens privacy, starting with what we called ghost mode on TikTok, but now called bubbles in the app, where you basically can set a safety bubble. If you're in that bubble, your location's hidden, but all our emergency features still work. And if there's an emergency, your parents can override it. So kind of saying like, we're going to do something. So if you have a problem with Life360, blame your parents, not us, because we're going to take a stand that you should have privacy. And the whole reason of using the app is not to control. And if that's, hey, you parents are using the app, you're using it wrong. So the reversal was astounding. It went far better than we could have ever expected. And it was interesting how, if we just genuinely engaged and I didn't try to like be this hoity-toity CEO, and I did kind of some drama that they probably knew, it was a little bit of like WWF wrestling built in there, but I haven't cut my hair in 7 months. I look like a homeless guy, and I've been doing videos pretending like here's what I need to do for my next job. And I've been tie-dyeing shirts to say Band Life 360 because they made swag about us. And I'm going to start selling it to make the money. And it culminated just a couple weeks ago with, we did a big sponsored hashtag challenge, which on TikTok, you can basically have these hashtags and they trend and people make memes around them. So we made an effect on TikTok where you could turn into a ghost and disappear in a song all about teen privacy. And I said, I'm looking for redemption. We launched this feature in the app that gave them what I wanted. And I just got beaten up in all sorts of different ways for a week. I got hit by, I went to a paintball field and said, any guys here use Life360? I happened to a whole bunch of them. And I said, I let about 20 tweens like pellet me with my shirt off and with paintball guns.
I would have shown up.
So, and then I went to these other influencers and the ghost mode hashtag got, I think it's almost 3 billion views now.
Wow.
It went big and now people are sympathetic. But I also have pretended I got fired. And so if teens are listening to this podcast, they're going to figure out the drama, but we've made it like a soap opera with a little bit of truth to it. And, we reset our ratings. We're back to 4.5 stars. So, with teens genuinely on our side, which is something I never thought would have been possible. So silver linings from 2020, more unexpected stuff out there. And I think the only thing more unexpected to me than COVID is that I have a TikTok account that's actually legitimately followed and loved.
Man, that is a story of the ages. I mean, that's a cultural, it's a digital cultural revolution. There's this whole other dimension that I don't know anything about, right?
Yep.
Well, I mean, I'm so old, I don't even know anything about the old dimension.
I don't know exactly how old you are, Howard. I know you're a little older than me. But
72. 30,
you must be younger than that.
No, I'm 72. I look good, right? If I say 72, my life would be so much better. Howard, you're looking great. Spry. Now I'm 55.
I was going to say, I didn't, that's what I thought.
You didn't say that with much enthusiasm. You were kind of like, oh, 72. That explains a lot of the noises coming from him.
Yeah. It is interesting, though, from even a founder's perspective and investor perspective, it's so easy to get out of date. And I remember how people overlooked us when we started and like, location sharing is a kid track. My wife's not cheating on me. I have good kids. Why would I ever need this thing? And to me, it was so obvious that they were like missing. Like you're, if that's how you think about location, you're missing the point. It makes your life easier. So with TikTok, I didn't want to be dismissive. And it's so easy to get a little bit slightly older and jaded and be dismissive. And I think people, I mean, they dismiss Facebook, they dismiss Snapchat, they dismiss Twitter. So I've tried to humble myself where it's very easy to miss these things. And so for TikTok, I didn't really get it at first, but like, well, clearly something's here. So I'm just going to, and I'm going to throw myself into it as if I'm one of the teens as best as possible. And I think that's what's worked. Cause if you look at other companies going onto TikTok, they're not doing TikTok content. They're just taking what they used to do and putting on TikTok, which just doesn't work at all. It has its own culture, its own style. And I think it's, I don't know if it's long term here, but it's definitely not. I don't think it's a flash in the pan. I think it'd be wise if people on the investor and founder side would and exec side in general like realize that.
Yeah, what a story. So, what? How big's the company? How many employees?
About 200 employees, 25 million customers, and then revenue was over last reported numbers over 75 million recurring revenue.
Annualized.
Yeah, but COVID pretty much the same at this point because we got hammered in Q2 with COVID now coming back up. So
why would people? Oh, because people are home, they cancel the service. So they go, oh, I know where my kid is.
Yeah, but they didn't cancel. That's why they don't sign up. So we've actually been remarkably resilient with existing customers, but usually the emotional trigger to initially download us is your kids are going to school, new routine, new phones. You get a kid with a license. And you're just completely scared and anxious. And so when the families are more insular, you don't have those triggering moments to get on the app. So our top of funnel registration fell over 50%, some regions even higher when we had that first wave of lockdowns. And we're holding round two. I think people are used to it. So we're still growing, even though we're like peaking numbers at this point, but definitely took a little bit of air out of our sails, but it does show, probably you mentioned LifeLock, probably similar. Once we get someone on, once they're paying us, if you're giving people peace of mind, it's pretty sticky. So we really haven't any churn, which has been great to see.
And so what was it like going about, like what was the impetus for Australia? Because obviously SPACs weren't around. This is about a year ago you went public.
It was in May, and then we'd been working on it before because we actually tried to go out and late 2018, but that's when there was that market hiccup. So we basically had to do the whole thing twice. So I'll share the backstory. I can talk a little bit about what it was like. So we have been around a long time. Even then, we were kind of a decade into it. We had people like you who had been in a really long time, funds that had basically end of life. We were not an overnight success. So we had a little bit of funky stuff with our cap structure, a bunch of strategic money, which can be messy. And so we really wanted to be public, but we were too small to do it on the U.S. Exchanges. So we could have raised another private round, but then you get these ever-increasing preference stacks. And I think one thing, I think people in the know this, but a lot of the headline valuations you get in private rounds come with a ton of structure. So they're almost like debt instruments as much as they're equity instruments. And you get the horror stories of companies selling for hundreds of millions of dollars and early investors and founders get and employees get wiped out. So I think a great thing about being public is it's a level playing field for everybody. And my shares the same as your shares, the same as the new investor shares. So I really like that, just even a de-risking for me and others. And I really want to make all our investors money. It honestly keeps me up at night that I could lose people's money. So I'm very happy you sold Howard. I assume that means I can ask you for the next check and I'm on your good founder list.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we have so many companies. We don't even know. We have so much money right now at Social Leverage. Knut, just see if we did sell. No, I'm kidding. Of course. What do you mean not on our good list? Of course. We left you alone. We kept in touch.
Yeah, there we go. I'm being semi-sarcastic, but I genuinely, as a founder, especially the seed investors.
No, I hear what you're saying, man. You saw an opening. You understand finance. these pref stuff, and we've been talking about it on the show. We saw the reason SPACs exist is the SoftBank, T. Rowe, Price, Fidelity. It was really no value add. It was just a sum for TechCrunch in New York Times, right? And yeah. You saw it even with Square when they went public. It sat at 10 forever because of all these pref stacks. No one really understood it. And so you've got Gurley and you've got Chamath and you got everybody saying, oh, a company with 50 million annualized sales should be public. So, you know, a year later, you would have had 10 SPACs after you.
Yes, we would have. So anyway, going back to that, I'm glad I was able to make money for early investors, and a lot of them still riding, but that was a big pressure off me because it's a big deal to me to make people money. And the process was, I mean, it is a miserable, miserable process. My last paycheck before Life360 was a summer intern at Goldman in TMT banking. And I always would sometimes wonder, like, what if I went the finance route? One of my biggest blessings doing this IPO process is like, thank God I did not become a banker. I say that with no judgment.
I agree. Bankers,
no judgment at all. If you can do something that strenuous and it makes you a ton of money and you love it, like, hallelujah. I'm glad there are people like you around. And I say the same thing to accountants and lawyers, but I'm a founder. And it made me realize that I am a founder, and there's something in there about, like, I think people need to figure out who they are. And I kind of got lucky that I became a founder, because I actually was trying not to be one. That's a whole nother story, but, it's a long slog. It's like a private fundraise times 10, because you have endless documentation, prep work, legal, accounting, public market investors, whether it be US or Australia. You're usually the funds are way less specialized. So you're in a weird, surprising way, you're answering way more basic questions. And when you're on a roadshow, it's like, say the same thing 15 times in a single day, smile the whole time, be high energy the whole time, and then rinse and repeat, and do that for like 2 weeks in a row while you've already, like, feeling brain dead from just writing hundreds of pages of, like, documentation that doesn't add any value to actually running the business. In fact, hurts it because it distracts the team so much. So it's a slog. But now that we are public, I would say on the plus side, I mean, A, it completely cleaned up our stack issues. For me as a founder, it's been a big risk reducer, because if we sell for a few hundred million dollars one day and things aren't a home run, I'll get my security. And after like 12, 13 years, I don't feel bad for saying I'm not wanting to put my entire net worth at risk again. I've been able to sell a little bit before the IPO and all that, but it still removes the binary outcome, which I like. And then we also, I think perhaps a bit by virtue of having a lot of strategics and very diffuse ownership prior to listing, our board was maybe a little bit on the softer side. They leave us alone. And I think being public does put a ton of positive pressure on a company, because whether you like it or not, you basically have this extremely assertive, aggressive manager watching over you all the time. They might be idiotic with what they want you to do, but you cannot rest easy. And I really like that pressure that it puts on the company. So I think one of our investors years ago told me about what he called the middle-aged fat man syndrome. And he said a lot of companies, after they're like 5, 6, 7 plus years old, they get a little bit of revenue. The founder's a little bit tired. You're middle-aged fat man, because you're not going to die and get a heart attack tomorrow, but your edge is gone. And so we had definitely maybe had a little bit of that creep in, and the IPO did really force us back into shape.
Huh. So how does the U.S. So I forget, Tom handled it for us. So how do you buy shares on Australia if you're American and you were listening? You said, I like Chris. Can you buy it on Robinhood, or can you buy it?
It's very hard for a U.S. retail investor. It's much easier for an institutional investor. And that's basically U.S. rules, not Australian rules, because they're trying to, the SEC doesn't want people to circumvent the IPO process. So basically, for a foreign company to trade, which we're considered even though we're in the US, we would have to have all the same disclosure processes as if we were just doing an IPO, at which point we might as well just do a direct listing and come onto the market. So, and that is something we're considering now, just broadly. I got to be careful about sharing any specific plans, but long term, we do want to come home. So If you're wealthy and have a private wealth advisor, you can probably call up your bank and get them to buy some shares. If you have a fund, you can probably, you can easily buy some shares. But if you're Robinhood trader, probably a little bit tougher.
Yeah. I mean, a lot has changed just in the last, forgetting, obviously COVID, but financially, the world woke up. There was like a big bang, in March. Now, obviously, the healthcare, but there's a big bang financial. Robinhood was cool, but then Robinhood became a thing. I don't know how. I would not have predicted it. DraftKings was around forever. Then it becomes a thing through a SPAC. And, knowing now what you know then, and I don't have any much skin in the game, I got a little bit of shares. The idea is, I think, a direct listing at some level. But anyways, you can't talk about that. But that's cool that you're, it's just life, no pun intended, but this shit is just in constant flux. It's like an always learning experience. Yep. Timing is everything. And Chamath getting all the glory, but there were so many things that happened that let the glory happen for the people who were here at the right time. These ideas have been around forever. You were responding to the times, which looked like, all we could talk about is, no IPOs, Series Q, SoftBank.
Yeah.
Now it's just completely the opposite. SoftBank's like a meme in itself.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. It is weird. And to your point about timing's everything, it's, you didn't really ask this, but just kind of reflecting on our journey. We've had so much good luck. We've had so much bad luck. But if you think so much of it is like even the initial location sharing idea, that's not really new. We had to slog it out for 5 or 6 years until it really hit, maybe even 7 or 8 years till it really hit. But then it hit. So it seems like so much of success in business or investing is being willing to take risk and then being persistent. And then some people just get lucky and some people just are way too early and they can't stay solvent. It's a cruel world out there.
Yeah, it's cruel, and you gotta kind of go with the flow. And I think that middle age comment, whoever your investor that said that to you, is like, I mean, a lot of investors aren't honest with themselves. And as a VC, we try and tell our founders like your type of stories, which is why I like doing these podcasts, and mixing it up is like, listen, now I can go to 100 founders and say, why don't you go listen to Life 360 pod? Because it's timeless, because he's got a 12-year story of a company doing $75 million in revenue with, 200 employees and, what was it? How many customers?
25 million.
25 million customers. It ain't all glory.
No.
So it's a 10-year slog. You're at year 12. COVID thrown in. Luckily, you're only 37. I didn't know you were that young. I didn't know you were only 25 when we backed you.
You insulted me once. I still remember one of your...
I only insulted you once? Well, now I'm insulted.
You genuinely asked, I forget what you said. You asked me if I was 40 yet or something. This was years ago. And I'm part Asian, which means I should look really young, and somehow it's all fading on me.
That's so funny. Well, you did come to Coronado. I remember you wheeling the baby down the street. So how's the family through COVID?
For me, talking about blessings and weirdness, I was getting burned out and I didn't really know what it was from. It's been a long slog, but COVID has, this sounds a little insensitive. I know it's been terrible for so many people, but COVID for me has been a huge blessing because I'm so much more built for a remote first world. I think so much of why it didn't work previously were social norms, and those social norms of working remotely have been shattered forever. So I bought a property way out in the country the first week of lockdowns, and now I have an office under a tree, and I'm out here, and started because of TikTok. I haven't cut my hair in 7 months, but I look like a homeless man. I'm on conference calls half the time, and I got a little John Deere tractor, and I go pick up rocks while I'm listening to inane phone calls, which I barely have to do anything, and I'm tan, albeit a farmer's tan, but I'm a happy guy. So COVID for me has been just this year of change, but personally very powerful. And I think a lot of people, I know I'm privileged, a lot of us that are working in the more IT side of things, our business has been impacted, but given I know it hasn't been that way for everybody.
Yeah, I won't get taken out of context. This is an investing show and an entrepreneurial show. So if you were digital, we just happen to be the lucky ones this time. the cloud saved us. I mean, I don't know. Like, it's not our fault. And it's just a weird environment because no matter how much you want to do, it's hard to do because you can't get out and give. And I understand a lot of wealthy people made all their money. Not you. I'm just saying a lot of wealthy people are like, man, I don't know. I'm listening to the news. I'm confused. I'm just going to take a year off and hide out. And I consider myself like you, one of the lucky ones because, you know, kids are around and they're out of the house, but around. And my wife, you know, we had two places so we could just come and go. So we are part of the lucky ones. So for Life 360, what does the future look? Is there a big growth idea that gets you excited? Because, you know, I agree with you about the edge, but you don't have an excuse at 37. You got hair, you got a tractor, you got a tree. You have everything you need. So what is getting you excited about Life 360?
Well, I actually have two tractors, Howard, if you must know. And a John Deere. So I'm doing really well. They're really good. A little rusty, but they're good. I am excited because I think there's, with COVID a little bit, it's accelerated so many trends. And how we use digital technology to communicate and connect. Look at Zoom. It's like it's pulled the world forward X number of years. I don't know how many years. I know that's kind of like I almost sound like one of those pontificating VCs on Clubhouse, but I think there's some truth to that one. And so part of what we have felt has held us back, but we've known it's going to change, is that right now there's still this aversion to things that are software-based, even paying for things, right? So when we talk about what we offer in our package, like for $20 a month, you can get everything LifeLock gives you, everything AAA gives you, everything OnStar gives you. You get like all these other features for so cheap because we have these mobile economics that work in our favor, but we still get people saying, why do you charge so much for an app? And I could say, well, are you paying for AAA? And they'll be like, yeah, I pay for AAA. Why? How much do you use it? Never. But it's just nice. And there's like, well, why would you not pay 80% less for everything we give you? And so there's this weird psychological opposition to paying for services through applications. And I think that line between digital and physical is going to go away. And we're going to be able to capitalize on that where people are going to be comfortable signing up for something like us completely through their phone. And they're not going to have this natural aversion to us because we're an app. And I also think we're going to be able to take our location features, which have been very utilitarian, and make them more about like move from where are you to how are you, and actually build much more richer communication within the family. And I think that's what could take us from 25 million active customers to 100 million plus. And our view is that there's probably some magic number around 50 million customers. I don't know, maybe it's 100, whatever. But there's at some point you're the gorilla. I think right now we're the baby gorilla in our segment. But there's some tipping point where we become a brand in our own right. And then I think you can get another step function level of growth. And it's really awesome that we as a company are funded. We have resources. We have amazing people now. I'm so much better at my job in so many ways. A little bit humbling how I missed TikTok at first, but also felt a little bit nimble that I figured it out way better than most pretty quickly. And I think this COVID moment is a great opportunity for so many companies that are on the forefront of digital.
And so what do you think of the SPAC? I mean, obviously you've got your own form of MBs, you know, because it's the shoulda, coulda, woulda. So what do you think of the SPAC thing and the direct listing just in general? Were you thinking about a SPAC at any point?
Oh, no one was talking about SPACs. It was like, I knew about them, like it wasn't, but it was always like really shitty companies that were, it was like a very negative stigma. There were no good companies doing it.
Yep.
I know you're asking me a general question, but I don't know. Maybe I believe in fate. I feel like my fate is the tortoise, not the hare. And I'm also a conservative person by nature, as much as you can be for a founder. So my general way of succeeding has been to take a more slow and steady slog, take a lot of pain and just stick with it. And that almost just seems like the universe has lined that up for me as the way I'm going to make it in life. So I've never raised money easily. It's always been a slog, but I feel we've always earned it. So SPACs, I mean, I think you're going to get the whole range of outcomes. I'm going to sound pretty cliche on this, but it's probably like 99 all over again. Like you had the Amazons of the world going public, but you also had the pets.com and it was complete vaporware. So I don't think it's going to be any different. I don't think any vehicle is inherently good or bad. But I know as a second rate angel investor and being around the Valley long enough, I can say with 100% certainty, there are some companies that were absolutely struggling just a few months ago. And now with no change in fundamentals are getting like 10 or 100x valuation increases. I know a company right now that is looking at a 1,000 time increase in valuation just because they have the right comp to point to.
Yeah. You said something interesting. The market wanted more. The macro, all these things combined, that there should be more vehicles on the road. So with more vehicles on the road come some low hangers. You know, the people, the low riders, you know, like you with your Sevilles, you and Hans Knute when you had the big cars and exactly. And the dice on the windshield.
Never
the, whale. Whale blubber.
A couple of whales, yeah.
So that's a really good, interesting thing. I mean, the world wanted more cars on the road at this moment, and Chamath came along and reimagined the SPAC, and the direct listing, for whatever it was, just wasn't getting hold. That's what Gurley wanted. And so I think what you did was ingenious. Obviously, I told you at the time. I mean, you had a problem. You figured out a solution, and it's never perfect. What was the peak market cap? 600-700 million?
Yeah, it was like around 600, and then we haven't done as well as you've liked there, which is a whole nother story.
Yeah, but that's the stock market. Stock market. You have a great software brand. You've got a great recurring revenue model. I think there's obviously a lack of, there's some apathy, right? Australia. Like, I mean, yeah. You know, I can't go tomorrow and buy 10,000 shares of this, you know, on my iPhone. And I mean, that's why I'm so bullish on the markets. Why can't I? You know, you filed one place. That's why I think crypto people get so excited, because they want to solve this stuff. But this is going to take more time, is all it is.
Yep.
And in the meantime, your process shows how screwed up the system is, which is another reason why SPACs exist. I mean, people want to blow their brains out on these things and pay 1,000 times for something that wasn't almost didn't make it a month ago. I mean, that's on them. Buyer beware. So.
Yeah. Here's like a thought experiment or framing, because this is an investing show. I don't think I would go short on any individual SPAC, but if I could somehow buy the equivalent of a put across an entire basket on them, obviously we have to, there'd have to be at a certain price, I would definitely buy a put on the entire thing. So I think it's going to end poorly for so many people, but I don't know if I can predict which ones those are going to be.
No, I'm the same way. When I talk about this with Zoom or with, Tesla, it's like, I don't want to bet on their demise. You know, they're overvalued, but let other people worry about that stuff. I'm out there hunting for great growth companies. So there's a big market ahead. I like the vision around AAA. You've got the teams off your back. I mean, that's heavy duty. You got COVID. Yep. Whether we like it or not, we're closer to the end of COVID than the beginning. And you know, we all learned a lot about ourselves. So Life360 is in a good spot. Now, what about, is it too small to do corp dev, or is this industry, like, who is the leader in this industry? Is it AT&T and Verizon? Like, who is your competitor?
That is part of our problem. We really don't have any direct competitors who are defining its space. And for the public markets in particular, that's very difficult. So we have a lot of alternatives. Apple is like Find My Friends. Google has Google Maps. But they're not exactly competing with us. You have people like LifeLock that offer a component of what we do, but we are trying to define this thing of like a family safety membership, kind of probably like what AAA was trying to define whenever they got started back in the day. So there's still no easy bucket for us. And branding agencies are almost like therapists. You can spend all this money on them and you think you're going to figure it out. And we still have not crafted that exact way of like, here's how to define our category, but that means we have to pioneer it.
Okay, so Life360 has got to go in pioneer mode. I like it. All right, well, this is fantastic to have get this experience. You know, it's nice. Like, you checked off all the boxes, right? You've got some security. You're still hungry. You've got a business that's really thriving. You have the wind at your back in terms of the digital, and you've solved the, you got the teens kind of off your back. So this is an exciting time. Is most of the employees in the U.S.? Is most employees, or do you have Australian employees or no?
We've now been hiring Australians, but actually Australians in the U.S. because we're a hot brand in that sense. They get a tie to home while working for a Silicon Valley company. But we're mainly U.S., but even prior to COVID, we had seen the writing on the wall for just the insane amount we were paying for engineers. And we were diversifying region-wise. And in some ways, the engineers outside of San Francisco are are better than the San Francisco ones because they maybe loyal is the wrong word, but they're definitely less mercenary. So we've been building up some really good people working remotely who are with us for the long haul. It's been great.
And what's the ticker?
360, ASX 360.
It's kind of cool. There's no numbers on the US.
I think we were the first numeric ticker on the ASX as well. So maybe someone on our PR team deserves a win for that.
All right, my man. I'm a little jealous of your hair. I just say that because I'm wearing a cap for the last year to hide my squigglies. So be safe. And I think people will really appreciate this. And I look forward to following up.
Awesome. Thank you, Howard. Thank you, Knut.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
See you later.
See you. K-Nut.
All right.
That's a story.
Great story.
You have to go battle these teams. I don't know what the hell. I can imagine me just asking my kids for help on TikTok, what that would be like. Stock would be at zero. I mean, that is interesting. So, you know, I wanted to bring a little different flavor. So it's still a huge win. I remember when we invested, it was back in the day when multiples weren't like they were today. So it was a big exit. A win for the social leverage team. It sounds like a win for everybody.
Right.
But some lessons in there hopefully people can learn. You are listening to Panic with Friends. Chris did have some panics in there, not on the show, but you can feel the panic. And we are twice a week talking to investors, traders, entrepreneurs about the markets and life and trends and momentum and trading. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Google, search Panic with Friends, search my name, Howard Lindzen. If you like what we got, I have a free blog every day, howardlindzen.com. Just go sign up. Thanks, StockTwits. Thanks, Knut. We will see everybody soon.